Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The content shared is not a substitute for professional medical, mental health, legal, or financial advice. Please consult a qualified professional for personalized guidance or treatment. By listening, you acknowledge that the hosts and guests are not responsible for any decisions or actions you take based on this content.
Feel like a grouch, go beyond the couch, share your confessions on the Aurora Sessions.
Hello, Aurora Healing Crew. Welcome to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch, where we take the stressors that come up in session and bring them into conversation beyond the couch. This is the space where real talk meets real life.
Hi, everybody. This is Teresa here, the founder of Aurora Sun Counseling, a group private practice providing psychotherapy for clients in New Jersey, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Today, I'm joined by Seth Bisonhirsch. Is that how you say it? How do I say it?
Bisonhirsch,
a truly multi-talented and award-winning composer, lyricist, performer, and author. His musicals include Love Quirks, which won Best New Score Off-Broadway, as well as The Diamond as Big as the Ritz, More to Love, and the Broadway-bound The Street Secret Adversary. He also written 10 cabaret shows, created the web series Every Day a Little Seth, produced over 900 showcases at Don't Tell Mama, and even has crossword puzzles published in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Seth's creativity shows no bounds knows no bounds, and I'm so excited to get his story today. Welcome, Seth.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I'm so excited to talk to you. For those who don't know, Seth actually composed the jingle for the beginning of the show, for the Aurora session. So thank you so much for doing that. That was
of course,
so nice.
It's my pleasure.
And you did that pretty quick. So what I've learned, the little bit that I've learned so far about you, is convinced that you're like Mensa status. Have you taken the Mensa test? Like, are you a club member?
I definitely could be a club member, but I think it's just one of those things you just pay money and I don't know what the perks are to be in Mensa.
Yeah.
One of my friends is in Mensa and they do like, I guess they have conventions or whatever. I don't know. I think I would have too much social anxiety being around so many smart people. But I definitely think I probably
welcome
do
to
qualify.
How we feel, us non-geniuses.
Yeah, I think that I probably do qualify for Mensa. I just haven't really had any interest in associating with so many nerds.
I could understand that and appreciate that because I too like to surround myself with a variety of different people and not just like people like myself. So that's actually very emotional, intelligent of you, being as smart as you are, to know that about yourself.
Also, really do like nerds, but, you know, in moderation.
Yeah. Safe. same.
I also like being the smartest person. And so it's if I'm around people of that level, I might not be the smartest person. And then I get really like cagey. Like, that's not fair. That's not fair. So, I mean, when I went to MIT, I was not the smartest person. And it was hard. It's a nice thing to be around people who are at your level.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like, it makes you feel bad about yourself when you're not the smartest.
That's what I've also found being a therapist who have been a therapist for clients who are super smart. And what happens is they're like just breeze through school and breeze through high school. And they get into like MIT or some really smart school where all the smart people go. And suddenly they have to like work at it and they're not. And then a lot of like the imposter syndrome sets in, like, oh my gosh. And they don't even know how to study. Like, they're learning how to study in college. So, and then they struggle sometimes when they go to their 9 to 5 because like it's just, I don't know if you can relate to that.
I've never had a 9 to 5. It sounds really terrible. So I don't really feel like getting up that early in the day, number one. I don't really like having a boss. I mean, there are, of course, trade-offs to being your own boss and having to constantly find people to work with you and to hire you. But I think that the trade-ons are I don't answer to anybody and I set my own schedule. And that, I think, is lovely.
So circling back to that, so I always like to tell a little story of how I got connected with Seth or my guest. And I was connected to Seth through Mo, who was on episode 5 and 6 of the podcast, my BFF. And we grew up in East Brunswick. I did not know you when I was living in East Brunswick, but I knew that you were Mo's friend because through social media or even before social media, she would talk about her friend Seth. So can you like tell me a little bit how you know Mo?
We went to high school together.
Okay.
And we were both in chorus. I don't know that she did drama. I think we were just friends through chorus.
Okay. And so you sing?
Yeah, I used to sing a lot more than I do, but I am in a choir that sings at Carnegie Hall. And
oh
I
gosh.
Do sing in my own song, my own shows. I just sing my own songs. So I don't have to like worry about how I sound so much because I'm just, the important thing is being funny, which I can do. But the choir, I actually have to sing correctly.
Okay. And so I was talking to Mo about the podcast and asked her if she knew anybody that can compose like a jingle. Because I didn't want to worry about any like copyright stuff. And she said, oh, let me ask Seth. I said, yes, please do. And so she connected us. So Seth composed it and I wanted Mo to sing. So she did. And so here we are. And in the process, I've learned so much about Seth. I know that's just probably the tip of the iceberg. So like I said in the intro, your career spans from musicals, cabarets, books, crossword puzzles. So when people ask, what do? How do you even begin to describe yourself?
I usually say I'm a multi-hyphenate theater producer, writer, performer. And if they still want me to talk, then I sometimes mention the crossword puzzles as well. I just kind of have a bad habit of monetizing my hobbies. So it becomes, oh, I enjoy doing this. How do I make money doing it? Oh, I don't enjoy it quite as much anymore because now I'm trying to make money doing it.
Yes.
But, you know, it is what it is. I think that if I could just be a composer, I would just be a composer. It's just that art is completely undervalued in this country.
I agree.
And the world, but especially this country, especially lately, it's just not a viable career choice. Like one of my friends from East Brunswick got a PhD in music and he moved to France and they made him a composer of a town. And so he just had to put on one concert every 6 months to say, this is what I've written while I've been living in this town for 6 months. And then everything else, he was just supported and he became like that town's composer.
Yeah.
And I think that's lovely. You know, I think we all could move to France. I think that I would probably be bored because I need to be doing things constantly.
Right.
But it's still lovely that they have an infrastructure for that. Like, mm-hmm. there's just nothing that exists, and the industry has been decimated from all.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
All levels at the moment, like mm-hmm. when I have my cast recordings on Spotify, I get like half a penny for every track listen. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it takes a while. I don't get paid until I hit $10. And that mm-hmm. happens maybe every 6 to 8 months.
My goodness.
So like, you can't really make a career doing that.
No.
And then of course, all my books on Amazon, I think I made like maybe $40 from Amazon last year and $40 from, you know, Spotify or whatever,
right.
from PD Baby. And it's like, and in theory, in the past, you would have passive income mm-hmm. and you could just kind of live off that. And mm-hmm. that doesn't really exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the only thing that still exists is live performance, which is mm-hmm. why you see people like Taylor Swift and Madonna, mm-hmm. they're still doing their live
on
performances.
Tour.
Like,
yeah.
you know, when you read Barbara's 1,000-page memoir, she even says if she decides she wants to have money, like a lot of money again, she does another concert tour. Like, and that's really the only way for performers to consistently make
right.
money, which is sad. In the old days, you would get a lot more passive income on TV and films as well. The streamings are paying, services pay pennies to what the old distribution
really
model
sad.
Used to
yeah.
be. And that's why you had that really big strike. But even after the strike, they're still not paying what it would have paid on a cable or on a broadcast. There's just no value anymore. People want everything for free. People don't mm-hmm. want to pay for it. People pirate the movies or they wait till it's on streaming. People
right.
share streaming passwords. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not guilty of these things. I'm just saying that this is where we're at.
Yeah.
But people don't really buy physical CDs anymore, although you can still buy the Love Quirks cast recording as a physical CD. People are not doing that. And they're not
right.
buying the digital downloads anymore, which they
right.
used to 10 years ago.
You just
now,
need to be
it's all streaming,
part of
and
a...
Then,
right.
And then if the person pulls it from streaming, people just don't listen to it. They're like,
right.
whatever, I don't need that album that badly to pay for it. Even like Taylor Swift had to take control of everything so
yes.
she could make that money herself and have control of it all.
Right.
So it's like, I think that the whole industry has been really blown up. I don't think the pandemic helped at all. I think it just exacerbated and accelerated all of these changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make a career as an artist is increasingly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I feel sad, which I do a lot, but I feel like I have to remind myself and be grateful that I'm one of the less than 1% of artists who actually just make a living doing that. And that is, I think, incredible. But it's also incredibly sad how hard it has become to make a living
right.
as an artist, especially in this country, especially in 2025.
You bring up so many points. One, I feel good about buying the actual vinyls for my daughter because I thought I was spoiling her and she's not appreciating money. But that helps me understand that we are supporting the artist by buying a physical thing, album. But two, so with, I mean, the art industry by itself is that was one of the first conversations we had after you agreed to do the jingle for me, was my daughter, like, pipe dream or real dream or whatever, wants to be in this industry. And as a mom who is worried about finances and money, you went to MIT. What did you major in MIT for?
I got a degree in computer science, and then I also got a degree in music composition. And in you know, the early 2000s, everybody was getting the degrees in computer science. It was a big hit thing. And now, 20 years later, I have multiple friends who got laid off because of AI. So maybe I made the right decision, because hopefully AI, even though they're trying to have AI take over writing and composing, like, it's kind of soulless. And so, but again, the live performances, I don't think can be taken over by AI. At least I hope not. But I had thought it was practical to major in computer science. And I went to MIT and I met a lot of smart people. I made a lot of really great friends who could all be in Mensa, although I don't know that any of them are. And that was incredible to be around people on my level and become friends with people on my level. And a lot of them were quirky and a lot of them were socially awkward. And then, you know, it was a great learning experience, but I never really liked computer science. And, like, you know, I have a friend on my hall who his father invented something or other, and he's been doing computer science since he was three. And you're competing with people who live and breathe it. And I got through it, but I, you know, I preferred the music composition major. And I had a teacher at MIT, Dr. Cohen, who told me I could do it for a living. And I looked at him like he was crazy, because that was not a concept I really understood. But then when I was looking at master's degree programs, I decided I would see if I could combine computers and music and find some sort of middle ground. And there's only like three programs in the country and only one accepted me. So I ended up going to NYU, which was very fortuitous, because NYU is such a theater and music school. And it's like, you know, instead of being the most talented person, but not the smartest, I again was the smartest, but not the most talented. And it was a humbling experience, I think, both of my schools, to be around people on my level. This was musical talent. There was lots of musical talented people. You know, people in my that I took classes with have, you know, are my peers, have gone on. A few of them have had a lot of success in this career. But I started playing piano for voice lessons, and the teachers were like, "You're a great pianist." And I had taken classes at MIT that you had to take a piano. And since I already played piano, the teacher at MIT was like, "We're going to make you transpose this on site." And so I developed that skill because of taking, you know, it's like the basic 101 course where most people are learning how to play piano. And the teacher, I believe, who was Russian, was like, "I can see you already know how to play." And so she's like, "You're going to transpose this up a fifth, and then you're going to transpose this down an augmented fourth." So, like, that's what I spent.
Have no idea what you're talking about, but
yeah, that's what I spent that time doing. So, since I had that skill, I became very marketable as a pianist. And I had the teachers at NYU be like, "You could do this professionally." And I had, of course, played piano for, you know, theater camp in East Brunswick. I played voice lessons for a woman in Westfield where I used to do shows, you know, when I was the summers I would come home from college. And so I already had been playing piano for money, like, on the side. But, you know, when I graduated with my master's in music technology, I realized there's really nothing I can do with this master's. But I did take an internship with this guy, Peter Milrose, who I'm still very good friends with. And he went to NYU and he ran a studio, and I learned about recording, and I met Larry O'Keefe, who's a Broadway composer of Legally Blonde, and I met Seth Rudetsky, who is a pianist, but now he does more, you know, he has a radio show and he does Broadway cruises, and he needed someone to video his show, the Chatterbox show at Don't Tell Mama, the cabaret club, and I said, "Yeah, I'm available for that." You know, I was still in school, and I ended.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Meeting a lot of Broadway people through Seth and basically being his unpaid assistant for 7 years. And then I started doing my own shows at Downtown Mama because I made that connection. I met Sydney Meyer, the booking director there, who is kind of like one of my mentors. And then I just started to fall into this cabaret world.
Right.
And a few years after grad school, I was doing like SAT tutoring, like physics tutoring, and mm-hmm. I was doing flyering for Zagat for quite a while. That was a really easy job where we got paid for the day and we only had to work 2 hours. That's my kind of job. And I just was doing all these odds and ends stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I started getting work playing piano for auditions with my friend who wanted to be a casting director said, you should apply to do this. And then I started doing that. And then I started doing the cabaret and I started doing my weekly series. And then I managed to get affordable housing. And then all of a sudden my life got fixed. And I was like, I don't have to work so hard because I feel valued as an artist that I can actually focus more on my writing now
right.
than having to make so much money just to live.
Right.
And I guess it's been quite a while that I haven't really had to do anything else besides playing piano. And then after the pandemic, I decided I was too old to sit up for 8 hours playing auditions. So I stopped taking those gigs and I just started just doing the cabarets and expanding the showcases, which are very popular. You know, we hit 900 this summer. So like I've done like over 900 cabarets now with about 5,000 singers, and it's been a whirlwind, and that has really taken over as my piece now of income, and then that gives me the time to focus on producing my actual projects in the hope that something like Love Quirks or Malka finally breaks through to the point where I have quote-unquote success,
mm-hmm.
although I think, as I said, I don't think that I will be able to stop performing live. I think that will always have to be part of what I do.
Right.
Just because the lack of passive income for everything is just right. not what it used to be.
This makes sense, though, too, because some of the actors that we see in the movies themselves, like, I often think, like, why are they still working? Like, they could relax and be home. But I mean, they also have millions of dollars too, but it makes sense. And it makes me happy to know that Taylor Swift will probably go on tour again so that I can possibly see her too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. She doesn't have to because at this point she's
right.
banked. Once you've banked a lot of money, then mm-hmm. you take your money and you invest it in some businesses that aren't
mm-hmm.
theater related, or you can invest in theater and lose some money. And then if you have one show that's a hit, you make enough money to, you know, compensate for that.
Right.
But like, you know, another thing that I've learned as I've got older is like your money doesn't really do much for you in a savings account. Like it just whatever. You can
right.
make more money. But if you're not investing in yourself, you're not investing in your life, you're not. It's just why. So like, you know, I had to have a moment where I broke out of that frugality. I'm still incredibly frugal compared to most people, I would say. But I learned that I can be frugal in the day-to-day, but that's when I started traveling more.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 10 years, I really started traveling because I put a budget aside for that. And of course, I travel on a budget and I am very, very good at doing vacations for very little money compared to what other people might spend.
Right.
But I still carve out that sort of thing. And I think that's very important for a well-rounded life. And I, you know, I'm certainly never going to be someone who throws money away and wastes it.
Right.
But I am somebody who will invest X amount of dollars into my film, X amount of dollars into my show in London, and not feel bad about that, because that is an investment in my career. And what else am I doing? You know,
right.
Like, I'm not going to be here forever. I need to put all the, you know, I have different baskets of eggs, but
right.
I have as many baskets of eggs as possible.
You're betting on yourself.
Yeah, I'm betting on myself, basically. And like, even if, like, I lost, you know, I do think that the film Mocha is doing incredibly well. But even if it hadn't, it was a worthy cause, you know, to keep my grandmother's story alive. And
yeah, so I wanted to dive into that a little bit, both your current projects, Love Quirks and Mocha.
Yes, people get them confused. I don't know how, but there's too much going on. Like, one of my friends I ran into on the street, she's like, "So you're going to London soon for Mocha?" I'm like, "No, I'm going to London for Love Quirks." And she's like, "Right,
right." Two totally different things. Yes. So tell me about how first Mocha, because I'm like really drawn to grandparents and history, family history. Tell me, like, what inspired you and how did this film develop?
Well, that's a very long story. I'll try to do an abridged version because that could take a few hours.
Okay.
Basically, I had always thought of dramatizing my grandmother's story in some way. And when she passed, before she passed, I promised her I would take up the mantle to keep the story alive, because my grandmother would tell her story in temples and in high schools and middle schools, or anywhere that would want her to come. She would tell her story, because it's like the most atrocious thing that's ever happened to humanity. And we need to keep the memories alive of what they went through. And I think new generation,
because not everybody knows or is reading. So what are we talking about? Just so everybody.
So my grandmother's a Holocaust survivor. Grew up in a small town called Klichinova in the Carpathian Mountains. And then in 1944, the Nazis came and took all the Jews out of the area. And she spent a few months in a brick factory. And then they moved them all to Auschwitz, where they murdered her younger brother and her parents and her grandfather, like right when they got there. And then my grandmother and her sister were in Auschwitz for a bit, and then they got moved to Bergen-Belsen. My grandmother would always do my great aunt's like work for her, because my great aunt was ready to give up, but she kept saving her life, and she would get beaten for it a lot. But on the train ride to Auschwitz, she saw this gorgeous sunrise one morning, the 3-day ride. And she said, "I'd never woken up so early before and seen something so beautiful." And she said that gave her hope for humanity. And even, you know, she's going through the worst thing ever, and yet she sees this beautiful symbol. And so I turned that moment into a song for her in 2011 with the intention of doing more with it. And I went through quite a few different collaborators for the project. First, it was a stage project, then it became a film. Then I had the idea to do it as a short film. And then the pandemic hit. And then I lost another collaborator, and then we brought on a director, and then she said, "This script is terrible." So I brought on my friend Lenny Schwartz, and then we worked on rewriting the script. But then that director left the project because of reasons I won't say on a podcast. And then we ended up bringing on Stacey Malton, who wouldn't have been available if we had wanted her to do it a few months before. So like the beshert of it was real. Like, and as soon as Stacey and Lenny and I got to work on the project for the first time since I started it in 2011,
right,
it felt like I had found the right people to work with to tell this story in the way I wanted to tell it, not in the way that these other collaborators had tried to force on me. I finally met the team that would match my vision and then take it to the next level. And we would have these Zoom sessions that would become very yes andy, like mm-hmm. in improv. We would just add and add and add and add. And that is how we developed the, and it became a whole different thing that it had ever became before. And then when we decided we were going to have Malka in the present, which I never would have thought of because she's dead and right. I'm very literal, but Stacey was like, Seth, it doesn't matter that she's dead. We're going to bring her back to life and put her in the present, even though she's no longer here. And then I was like, well, there's only one actress who I could see playing my grandmother, and that would be Tova Feld. She had just seen her in Funny Girl, and I was like, she kind of looks like my grandmother. So I reached out to her through some mutual contacts, and thankfully she, you know, I mean, she listened to the song and she was like, this song is genius, and she wanted in. So
when I saw that you had a few, what was it in East Brunswick that you had a film festival?
We were in the East Brunswick Independent Film Festival, okay. where we won Best Cinematography.
Amazing.
We hopefully will be doing another event in East Brunswick, though I have to talk to someone about that. We probably will hopefully do Love Quirks in East Brunswick too, but that's, I don't know. I just keep putting things out. We've done about 10 film festivals at this point, which is actually a lot for a short film, because mm-hmm. there's like thousands of films.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you don't get into a festival, they don't even watch them all. They have so many that have been submitted.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the film is done. I don't really know much about film and film festivals, but from what I have learned from Lenny and right. Stacey, we're doing incredibly well. We won Best Cinematic Short at the Cinequest Festival in California, which means we're qualified to be eligible to be nominated for an Oscar.
That's
so
exciting.
Now we're like, you know, taking the steps to try to get on the Oscar shortlist, which yes. is like, that would be unbelievable. You know, that would be a jump to the top tier, you know, as
right.
I tell people, I'm like at the top of the second tier is where
yeah.
I think I am. Like I'm at the very tippy top of my
right.
level of what I've been achieving and what I've done. And like, you know, I've got off Broadway, I got off West End, we've done this great short film. But I think the top level would be more Broadway and feature film and mm-hmm. winning an Oscar and a Tony and a Grammy and an Emmy. Those are things that I always said I was going to do. And mm-hmm. it's like taken a very, very, very long time. But I feel like this film, finally, with the right team and the mm-hmm. right people, I think we're finally at the point where I can finally jump to that level. And we did just finish draft 4 of the feature film version, which mm-hmm. was always the goal, to use the short as a proof of concept. Because when you say you're doing a musical film about the Holocaust, people
right.
don't really know what that looks like, because there hasn't really been one. Like,
right. I can't think.
There's
right.
Fiddler and there's Cabaret, but Fiddler is more about the pogroms and then pogroms in Russia. And then Cabaret is more about what's happening in Germany before.
Mm.
There's no musical that is like literally taking place out
right.
of a concentration camp. So I feel like, to me, my grandmother goes off into this world of music and it becomes kind of like Dancer in the Dark, except mm-hmm. it's a cabaret. So I call it like Sophie's Choice meets Dancer in the Dark. It's what my log line for it would be. But
where can people see it? Like, can I see this somewhere? Or
no, it's not available yet because we're still doing the festival circuit.
Okay.
So people would have to wait for a festival to be by them.
Okay.
Or they could sponsor a screening at their local, like whatever, synagogue or Jewish
right.
center. We have
okay.
a few screenings lined up at JCCs around the country. I'm going to set more of that up next year. I'm
okay.
just incredibly busy. And
yes.
of course, going to London in a few weeks. So
yes.
that's on the list for next year, is to get it more available. Eventually, after it gets nominated for an Oscar, or, you know, Knockwood wins an Oscar, we will
ugh.
Get a distribution plan.
Right.
And it should be available somewhere.
This is like, I have chills, like just thinking and listening to your story, and what an honor. And like, to do this for your grandmother, I know, like, you probably feel honored to have your grandmother to do this kind of story. But like, that's just so wonderful that her grandson, who she didn't even think she would be able to like have one day, seeing her family die in front of her or around her, and to have this still continue to have her story being told. That says a lot about you as a person, and about hearing what you had to go through to get to where you are now, to be the top of the second tier. That's a lot of grit. Yes, it's not obviously being in a concentration camp, but that's hard work. And this is part of my interest in wanting to talk to you, is this is not an easy industry to be in. What do you think kept your, like, I don't even know, like your mental health stable, or what did you have to do to make sure your mental health was okay so that you could show up and act and invest all this emotional energy in?
I don't know that my mental health is okay. I mean, I think it's a daily struggle. I just think I'm very stubborn and persistent. And mm-hmm. when I say I'm going to do something, then I do it. Like, I just don't take no for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of dig in. And you just have to, you know, other people in this world have success and have mm-hmm. done these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just looked at what every single other person had done and mm-hmm. been like, okay, this one worked at a piano bar, or this one did this sort of thing, and this one did this to get their show off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of taking the steps and breaking them down and doing mm-hmm. them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of mental health, I think something that I learned as I got older, that it was okay to take breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think adding traveling into my life
mm-hmm.
was very cathartic and very, very good, because it was like, you know, I have to keep my brain occupied at all times. But mm-hmm. if I say I'm doing a week and a half in Italy,
mm-hmm.
which I did last January, which I highly recommend, I spend the whole time planning this trip and I keep it all maximalized, and I am doing the write-up of it, I'm doing the photos of it, and I'm making sure I get to every single spot in Rome that I want to take a picture of.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a way is very cathartic to take my brain off of everything else. I also think that writing puzzles is great, because unlike writing a musical, I don't have to rely on collaborators. I don't mm-hmm. have to rely on their time and their getting back to me in a timely manner.
Right.
And I also don't have to raise an insane amount of money to produce the puzzles, because
right.
they're there and then I submit them. And, you know, I think my rate of getting the puzzles published
yeah.
is, I mean, it's certainly higher than it was when I started, but I think it's pretty decent. You know, I just got my 18th puzzle published, and where I also got commissioned to write a book on 80s pop culture crossword puzzles, which were,
oh my gosh.
We did 50 puzzles this summer with my friend Mel.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Who's my editor, and she has done an amazing job editing, and we really work together, and we're actually handing in that draft tomorrow. So, like, that was what I did with the summer. But with the puzzles, it's like, I find that's a break, because I can sit here and just play with the puzzle for mm-hmm. hours, and it really passes the time. And it's nicer than, you know, having to, like, beg people for money or having to, like, get people to be interested in doing my cabaret.
Right.
So I think that's important, too. But in terms of both Malka and Love Quirks, there were breaks in the project. Like,
yeah.
Love Quirks in particular, after the 2011 reading, and we had some people I thought were going to come through with money, and they both ended up being flakes. It was very depressing. I went into a very deep hole of depression. Mm-hmm. I also had a really bad breakup. And then in 2012, I lost two grandparents, which mm-hmm. I had had all four grandparents, you know, until I was 33, which wow. I think is really, you know, lucky and I'm grateful for. But the end of the result was, I think my first really big loss was at 33. I hadn't right. had to deal with that sort of thing, although I did lose one of my cats a few years before that. But it's like, I think that, you know, Love Quirks took a break, and then we did the off Broadway run in 2014 and a reading 2014 before that. And then we did a reading 2015. Then we took a break for 4 years. We put the project away. And in 2019, I thought, let's bring it back, just because I wasn't ready to let it go, because I'm, right. as I said, very stubborn. But I did take a few years off there. I did my sitcom pilot, and then I was told that I didn't act well enough in it. So I focused on acting for a few years. I took acting classes. I took improv classes. I took voiceover classes. And I think that was very enriching for my soul. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I did have a commercial agent for a year, and I never booked anything. And then he disappeared. I think he might be dead. I'm not sure.
My God.
I don't think he's dead. I don't know what happened. He might have gotten fired.
Well,
I don't
that's
know.
The only reason why somebody would ghost you and disappear.
Exactly. I don't know what happened to him, to be honest. Yeah. But like, you know, I gave it a go. But at the end of the day, I did not like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like not having control. I don't mm-hmm. like auditioning for other people. I don't like right. having been on the other side so much. Mm-hmm. I know how, like, it's so down to, oh, this right. one has, you know, longer hair. Oh, this one, we like their accent better. Or this one is the right height. It's so, like, subjective. And there's so many actors. So I was like, no, no, thank you. But it did, you know, but I do still, you know, produce things, and I will act in them. I sing in my shows, and I'm happy to do any of that sort of thing when somebody I know is like, oh my God, I want you to do this. And I have friends who occasionally ask me, I'm more than happy to do all that sort of stuff. But if I have to jump through hoops to get hired,
right.
I don't really want to do that. And I have a lot of respect for actors, but it's like, it's exhausting, and right. I feel really bad for them. And the amount of rejection, I get plenty of rejection, especially on dating apps. But like, the amount of rejection, it's like,
I can't imagine, Seth.
It's so much rejection everywhere that when you're an actor, you're getting it at such a regular basis. Like, right. I can't, you know, it's a lot. So I prefer producing my own stuff.
Yeah. It sounds like you also know your own limits too. Like, because it's not like what you chose to do is any easier. It's just different than auditioning 24/7. So I think you knew, like, where you wanted to spend your energy as well. And then knowing, like, when to take breaks, or being forced to take breaks, or and what to do to enrich yourself, like being a student again. Back to Love Quirks. So that's also a really long project.
Yes, I wrote a whole book about it.
Oh my, which one? Is it the one that I started reading?
No,
or
it's my fourth book, The Making of a Musical, The 12 okay. Years Journey of Love Quirks.
Okay.
We just got a couple copies for the cast in London.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. I'm like, I'm a fan now. Well, I've been a fan. And ever since we talked 2 months ago, I've been yes. a fan.
I appreciate it.
I just have so much respect for this industry and you and all the stuff that you've been doing. The Love Quirks, you said, started in 2011. And
yeah, it really started in 2010.
Oh, wow.
As a song cycle. But a lot of the songs in Love Quirks were written before that. Like, if you read the book, some of them were written in 2002.
Okay.
And two of them were a part of Meaningless Sex,
okay.
my first Fringe musical, although they've had massive revisions, of course. And it was a very long journey of, you know, we did readings in 2011, I said, 2014, then 2015, then 2019. Pick up the show off Broadway, the amount of changes the show has been through, that the score has had, you know, new songs, it has new lyrics. I had to rewrite a whole bunch of lyrics for London, just because of the cultural differences, but we keep coming back to the show because it's about the universality of love. And I think it's a wonderful, hilarious show, but it also was poignant. And we've seen, you know, the hard thing, I think, is getting people to see the show and to learn the show. I think when people take the time to listen to the cast recording, which is streaming on all platforms, or like, you know, come to see the show, or and then we had the college production. Everybody loved the first college production. We have a second college projection lined up in Rhode Island in January. And I hope that we get more of these productions because I think that everyone just really relates to the show. It's very authentic. It's based on all of our friends and what we went through in our 20s and 30s, you know, trying to find love. And I think it really speaks to people. And it's also, as I keep saying, very funny.
Yeah, I love that. Two things that I love is love and humor. As a person who is, I'm a marriage counselor. And so I believe in love. I love when it works out.
Well, maybe I should have seen you when I was going through my divorce.
Well,
but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, no. And I think that sometimes not love isn't always supposed to work out at the end with certain people. So it depends on which way. But if there was love in the beginning, if there was love and respect and trust and commitment, hopefully the goal is to help the two of you find it, find your way back and then to grow from there. So Love Quirks is in England now. And
yes, it's going to be at Off West End. It starts performances on September 18th and runs through October 12th. And it's very exciting.
I wish I could go. I haven't been to Europe, so like listening to you and the travel, that's
I mean,
be
I keep telling
list.
People they should come, but everyone is like, you know, I don't know, I guess they're very quote unquote busy, but like, I think that it's totally doable to work Friday, hop on a plane Friday night. The flights right now are only about $400.
Right.
Take the plane overnight, like sleep a little bit on Saturday, come to the show Saturday night. Leave on Sunday or Monday.
Right.
And if you can take a few days off, that's even better. Like Columbus weekend is in there. If you have off Columbus weekend, fly back Monday night, get back in Tuesday, go right to work. I don't know that people our age could do that. But like, you know, as I said to my friends in their 20s, I'm like, I think you could go from work Friday, stay the 3-day weekend, and go right into work Tuesday.
Well, you just spelled out the itinerary for them. So it's even easier at this point.
Yeah. See the show Saturday or Sunday, whichever day works better for you. You'll be a little bit tired, but you know, you'll get
It'll
to see the show.
It. Yeah.
I mean, of course, everyone would rather come for a week. I have friends who are coming for a week.
Right.
But you know, if you can't swing that with your schedule or your schedule, I should say.
So one of the things that I've learned in meeting you is that the ticket prices in the UK are much different than New York City. Yes. And
that's called government subsidy and government support for theater. It is a priority for them.
Okay.
Which we do not have here.
Okay.
Yeah, the theater, like the property taxes on the theaters are much lower.
Mm-hmm.
So the theater doesn't have to charge as much rent. That's all subsidized.
Okay.
So the rent we're paying for our theater is about what we were paying for an off-Broadway theater here.
Okay.
It's actually twice as many seats and a gorgeous place. And the infrastructure, it comes with a box office. It comes with ushers and stuff. We didn't have that. We didn't have that off-Broadway here either because we were at a new theater that didn't have that infrastructure set up at all. So it's just a much better like system. And then the government gives you a huge tax rebate at the end of your show. If you lose money, it says thank you for doing theater, and they give you some money back off of your taxes.
Why is it because Shakespeare is from England? Like, why? What is the difference between the culture of theater in the UK versus New York?
It's capitalism. America is really big on capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
America is really big on let's have a hit Broadway show and make a lot of money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in London, they're more concerned with having a well-written show. They don't care if it sells well as much. They do it more for the prestige.
I love
I'm sure
that.
It's selling well isn't a problem for Andrew Lloyd Webber. I don't think he minds being a billionaire. But I think in general, I mean, really, try to name a second one. It's right. Andrew Lloyd Webber is the only one. And Elton John, but Elton John is really a pop star first.
Right.
And I don't think any of Elton John's musicals have made the kind of money that, you know, say Phantom has. It's really it. It's really him and then the ones who wrote Les Mis. But then, you know, Miss Saigon was a decent sized hit. But their other ones, Martin Guerre and the Pirate Queens, were flops.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, I think, has done very well with the amount of hits he's had.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of British writers who have made that, who have hit that stratosphere. And I think it's because it's a different model where they can have their moderate success and make a living doing it without having to hit the stratosphere, where here there's more of an incentive for the show to be a mega hit like Stephen Schwartz and Wicked. And I think that the economics here are way different. Another thing you save money on in England is you're not paying healthcare for the actors because the government provides it for free, which should happen here, but hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you're spending a lot of money on that sort of thing when you're going with unions.
Right.
And so you have, especially on Broadway, you have the actors union, you have the backstage union, you have the ushers union, you have the musicians union. You have the people who, I think the costume makeup people have union. You're paying for all these people to have healthcare every week. And that's like adding up to at least $500,000 a week. Whereas if the government covered all that for free, that would be a huge amount of money not having to be covered by the show itself. Plus the property taxes on the theater doesn't help.
Right.
And the insurance is way more expensive here because it's a racket. And London, we're paying very little to insure the show for 6 weeks compared to what we pay here.
I love a little bit of healthcare economics in a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the truth, you know?
Yes.
So everything
yes, for
is
sure.
more affordable there, which means the ticket prices are more affordable. Like Love Quirks, we're charging £25 is our top. Here it was $79. Like, that's just the difference, you know? And so a lot more people will come to the show because it's such an affordable price point.
Right.
Like, they're not, like, if you go to a movie, it's probably £20 or maybe 18. I don't really know.
Right.
But, like, it's not that much more to see a live show.
Right.
And so more people are seeing the live show. And as I said, live theater is one of the only things you can't replicate anywhere else. That syzygy with the audience, like, you're not finding that when you go to a movie, you're not finding out when you're sitting at home watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's hopefully not something that AI can replace. So I think that's more valued there.
Yeah.
And because of the affordability, I think more people would see a Broadway show if it was affordable. But unfortunately, there's no way to recoup, even with the massive amount of prices, like Sunset Boulevard ran for a year. And it still lost millions and millions of dollars, even with really high prices. And it was a huge hit and it won all these Tonys. But it's not a financial model that is sustainable.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people looking at that right now. And then at the same time, the government has recently cut all arts funding across the board, PBS, NPR, the NEA. It is terrible and it is decimating.
Yeah.
There's just, I don't know what the solution is, but with, of course, the economy is crashing too, and that's not helpful for finding people who are going to invest and donate to theater. They're not going to have that extra money either.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really draconian. I don't think you have quite as much of this in the UK.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense for sure. So circling back to your cabaret, that's one of the posts that I love seeing on your social media is how many times a week do you have that?
Well, I used to do them once a week and now it's very often twice a week. When I get back from England, I'm down to a few weeks of one a week again, to like, you know, because of jet lag and to acclimate. But it really is a supply and demand thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I get like more performers than I have space for, I just add shows. And if I don't get enough performers, I just kind of cancel the show.
Right.
And then like this summer, I ended up having to cancel the June, but then I added in August.
Okay.
So it all kind of balances out.
Right.
But like at the end of the day, it's like, if I have enough singers, if I got to the point where I had too many singers and I need to do more than twice a week, I probably just couldn't physically do it.
Yeah.
But for the moment, I try to rotate the weeks of one or two. And occasionally, I do like 9 a month. And by the end of that month, I'm like, I'm going to get a massage very frequently.
Yes. So for those who aren't familiar, and I'm not familiar at all, I just know you play the piano for these singers. So they sign up to sing. Is it to help expose them, or like what is their draw to doing this?
I think it's part exposure. So I also provide them the HD videos that I send to them the night after, like the night of the show, which I mm-hmm. think a lot of other places take weeks to do, mm-hmm. but I can't, you know, if I have stuff to do, I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. But what I try to encourage people to do cabaret is it's, you know, it's been an art form that's been around for a very long time in French and Germany and really only in New York and a little bit in London. And it's just this unique art form that combines story and song. And so you're singing a song and then you're talking about yourself and you're telling a story of your life or what's going on with your life, or it could be a little bit stand-up-y if people want. But I think overall, the important thing is it's very personal and you're revealing some facets of yourself or your life that even...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Then your friends who are coming to see you didn't really know about you. Mm. And then that, I think, is something you can't find anywhere else. And it's also about being comfortable as yourself in a performer situation. And a lot of other companies do what they call cabarets, but they're really more concerts because there's no talking in between. And that's not really a cabaret by real definition of what a cabaret is. It's more that when we learn about you and then it infuses why you're doing the song, and then the song has more meaning because of that. And
right.
So I've done over 900. I emcee the shows. I start with one of my songs, one of my comedy songs. I usually do like 3 to 4 minutes of stand-up based on whatever's going on in my life, or getting mad at Netflix for kicking me off my parents' account, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I introduce people with quirky facts about themselves, so it's not a boring bio.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets the tone of we're here to have a good time. And the singers come up, they sing a song, they talk, they sing a song. And then we have 6 or 7 on the evening. They all bring 6 audience members, and then we have a show.
Oh, I love that. And it sounds like a lot of work. And
It's a lot of work. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a lot of texting people when they ignore my emails, or checking in on text because my emails go to spam a lot now because Gmail hates me. It's a lot of like following up with people and getting their contracts and making sure they don't flake. And then if they
have
to owe you a cancellation fee, it's a lot of, you know, and then of course it's an occupational hazard of people ghosting you from that or like disappearing. But for the most part, I try to like have a phone conversation with everybody, which also is time consuming, just to make sure they understand what they're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I never force anybody to do the cabaret. I'm like, if you don't want to do it, don't apply. If you don't want to do it, don't sign up for a phone conversation. Don't send your contract. But what I do think is if you don't want to do it after you've applied, you should at least say, I'm no longer available.
Right.
And then I'd stop harassing you. And then I'll stop worrying that my email is going to your spam.
Right.
That's just, I think, something that young people don't know how to do.
Yeah.
They don't know how to politely say, I'm no longer interested. I'm
have
no longer
accountability.
Available.
Yeah.
It's very hard. And I think that in particular, not to pick on the young generations, but I think they are inundated with social media. I think they have 10 different messaging apps.
Mm-hmm.
So if you text them, they don't always see it because they're... So I try to figure out where people are responding.
Mm-hmm.
And like by demographic, if someone's an email person, a LinkedIn, a Facebook, and Instagram.
Do you snap them?
I don't snap them. I think a lot of the kids are on snapping.
Yeah.
I don't do the snap. I don't do it. I got rid of TikTok. I fucking hate it. Like, I don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
But I think it has really fractured their attention span and fractured
right.
their ability. And like,
yeah.
I personally have a desktop computer. It has a really big screen. I have a keyboard
mm-hmm.
and a mouse, and I turn it on every day, and I sit at my desk, and it's on for 12 hours, and I respond to people very quickly because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think everybody does that. In fact,
right.
I don't think anybody does that anymore. And I don't think you can really do that from a laptop as much, and you certainly
right.
cannot do it from a smartphone.
Mindfulness. You are mindfully and intentionally responding to people.
Yes.
Which you're right. When we're like on our phone, it's like here and we're distracted. We might be walking
yes.
or doing
watching
something.
TV.
Exactly. So I love that you bring the mindfulness as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, well, I respond to everybody. I do it when I get up, before I go to bed. I always clear the inbox unless, you know, I'm incredibly busy that day for some reason. I am always very cognitive of making sure I've responded to every single email
mm-hmm.
I have, but I won't do it on a phone. I will never
mm-hmm.
do it on a phone. I will always wait till I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be harder in London not having a desktop, but, you know, on my iPad, I'm going to have to, like, you know, I know every few days I'm going to have to use my iPad, which is not as easy, but it's at least I have a Bluetooth keyboard for it.
Yes.
But I think anyway that nobody's like that, and they don't
yeah.
teach these skills because nobody has them and nobody knows them. And I think that it's really detriment to society, especially those, you know, all the propaganda on these terrible social
mm-hmm.
media things, and makes people feel bad about themselves in a lot of ways. And like, even when, as I said, I run into my friend on the street, she gets my projects confused because she's inundated with so
mm-hmm.
many things on these feeds that I don't
mm-hmm.
know that you can really, like,
mm-hmm.
you have to see it so many times for it to
right.
settle through. But if I see someone in person, then they're like, oh, like
right.
I'd send them an email with everything I do. And then when I see them in person for the cabaret, they can't keep it straight. They're like, yeah, I kind of skimmed your email. But like, there's nothing that can replace the in-person
right.
nature of things.
Just like
yeah.
theater. Just like
yeah.
live theater. Nothing can replace that. So we're at the end of our episode. What are some, and being that this is a mental health-based podcast, what tips would you give for the people that's in the industry who might be hopeless or struggling or in it? What mental health stuff worked for you? Or just do you tell them to make a decision and just go to a 9-to-5 or keep at it? What would be like your tip for people?
Well, I mean, look, as I think a lot of people say these sorts of things, I've heard it a lot. If there's something else you can do that would fulfill you, then you can always do that. It would be a much easier thing, I would think. But if you're, you know, this is all you want to do, I think that the key is finding a survival job that is flexible, that works for you,
mm-hmm.
and that you don't mind doing, so that
mm-hmm.
it's not like, you know, killing your soul while you're doing
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. And it takes some time, just like it takes time in a relationship or to find the perfect apartment.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time to find something that you can do while you're doing this, because
mm-hmm.
very few people only do this career. So
mm-hmm.
it's about finding something else that can sustain you and hopefully allow you the flexibility and the freedom. And that stuff is kind of hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
I have one friend who does transcription work for like 60 minutes.
Mm.
And then she can take as much or as little as she wants around her schedule. Although that is something that is being replaced by AI.
Mm.
fortunately. But it's hard. But I think if you really want to do it, that you will find a way. And in terms of your goals, you know, you have to look at other people like you who have succeeded and see what they're doing and see what that looks like and kind of have a different version of success in your mind, because it's just the amount of timing and luck. And it's hard. You know, I have friends who have Tony Awards. They're still hustling.
Right.
My good friend Tova, you know, is still hustling. I said to her, does it ever get a little bit easier? And she said, no, honey, it does not. Like, you are, this is what you've signed up for. So, like, I think it's knowing that it's a very, it's up and down. It is a roller coaster. It is, you hold on. You're going to have good moments. You're going to have bad moments. And when you have the upswing, it's about being grateful for it and enjoying that upswing. And when you have the downswing, it's reminding yourself that it's only temporary and that you will get through this before you can have an upswing again. And it's like, and it's, that's just life. You know, you, sometimes your career has an upswing and then your personal has a downswing, and sometimes it's reversed.
Yeah. Sometimes it's at the same time.
Yeah. And as I said, it's important to take the break. It's important to say, okay, I deserve a vacation. I'm going to take off. It's also, I know plenty of people who are like, I'm not doing this anymore. And they take a year off and they focus somewhere else. And then either they're recharged at the end of the year or they're like, okay, I'm really done.
Yeah.
Those are two directions it could happen in. I have some people, like I have a guy, one of my friends who's in his late 50s, early 60s, maybe his early 60s now. And he retired early from his finance job and he made enough money that he can still do investments and still invest his money, but he can pursue his career now. And he does cabaret and he does TV and film and he's come back to it full swing. But at the time when he was in his 20s, he made the practical decision to not be doing it. Or like, that's another great thing, cabaret. I have a one-woman show. It's my friend's third show and she works as an accountant.
Right.
But she had a crossroads in her life and she said, no, I want to have money and I want to have a family. And so she left behind this piece of her, but she can still revisit it to do a cabaret every other year. And that is where she finds that. I have a med student. I actually have had a med student and a law student recently who are pursuing that, but they, the cabaret allows them to still have that fulfillment.
Yeah.
Which I think also, as you see, my cat just walked by. Having a cat is very helpful. That's another thing. I think my cat has been very good for my mental health. I call him a therapy cat.
Yeah.
I think having a pet is incredibly important. And of course, having really great friends and family. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing you learn as you get older is that not all of your friendships are going to last for your whole life.
That is true.
And it's okay. You know, I lost a bunch of friends collaborating on Malka with them.
Mm.
Did their friendship in. I lost a friend that we traveled together and had a huge falling out because of that. And it's just, I think it's accepting that people come in and out of your life and the fluidity. And that's the same. I've learned it's the same with money. It, sometimes it comes in, sometimes it goes out, but you're still alive and you know, you're, hopefully you have your health and the focus on what you have and the gratefulness. And it's not easy and it's not something I do enough, but I think it's very valid to focus on your mindfulness and to focus on your gratefulness and to try to redirect with cognitive behavioral therapy your dark thoughts and your depressive thoughts and your, oh my God, you know, this is really a terrible day. My God, I can't believe I lost people for this cabaret. Like this week I had a cabaret. I had a bunch of people drop out because of illness or family stuff or death or work. And it's just some weeks it's like, what the hell? Why is this happening to me? And then it makes you more grateful for the weeks where, oh my God, I did have a show and all seven people showed up. And that rare week, which is not often, that I will have everybody hand in all their stuff on the deadline and I don't have to, I wake up the next day and I don't have to text anyone to be like, I'm missing your song choices. That's very, very, very rare. But when it happens, then I'm like, my God, Wow.
It's appreciative gratefulness, yeah. Mindfulness. I love that. I love those words. So let's end on a fun question, being that love quirks and is your new show coming up, and you mentioned your dating apps and you mentioned humor. So can you describe, I guess, what you're looking for? I don't even know, like, if you have somebody now or whatever, but when you are on a dating app, what are you looking for? What are you looking for in a partner? What should people know about you?
I think dating apps are absolutely terrible. I think they're the worst thing that have ever been invented. I find that everyone on them is really rude and flaky.
Right.
And I have not had any good experiences being on them since my divorce.
Mm.
I think that I just would like somebody who actually likes me.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be really nice. But it's very hard to find.
Liking is very important, is what we strive for in marriage counseling, because the more you like someone, the nicer you'll be to each other. So where can people find you, Seth?
They can go to my webpage, sethbh.com, S-E-T-H-B as in boy, H as in horse.com, bh.com. Boop! That's my jingle for my website. And then they can find me on Facebook and Instagram at sethbh.com. I've pretty much gotten off of everywhere else because it was just too many.
Now that I know how you feel about social media and TikTok, and
I honestly absolutely hate social media, but I use it, and it's a necessary evil, because this production in London would not have happened without the Facebook group of London producers that I met producer in. And Instagram in particular has been incredibly helpful at getting me dozens and dozens of performers and spreading the word about the shows. So I do maintain those two, but I don't really use them for personal stuff anymore. I mostly use them just for business purposes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out. And I'm so glad we got to meet in this way and having this conversation. I love hearing about your grandmother and the journey that it took you to have these two projects going on right now, along with all the other three, because your crossword puzzle book is just submitted.
I'm excited for that
to
be done. But I do have, I think my next one that's published is going to be an Apple crossword in October. So that's the next one that's published.
What do you mean Apple crossword?
Apple crossword. Apple has a crossword. Yeah, you have to pay for it. It comes with Apple News.
Okay, I have that. So I will look for it.
Yeah, you might be the only one who has it. I don't know anyone who has access to Apple Crossword. But I think if you look at the news app, Apple Crossword's in there. But I did just submit a bunch of other puzzles. So hopefully there'll be more published puzzles coming out soon.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing about you jumping from the top of the second tier to the third tier. And I really believe...
Well, the first tier.
The first tier.
But I feel like when I make that jump, then I'll be at the bottom of the totem pole again. So.
And that's okay. That's okay. You have, obviously, the grit, the energy, the perseverance to do it.
I just don't really... stop. And I really don't take no for an answer.
You need that. I need some of that.
Until I finally hear no like three times.
We also call that different things. I tell my kids, no is a no. If you keep asking, it's coercion. But we will leave that for
Yes, that's true. I'm great at coercing people, apparently.
All right. Thank you so much, Seth.
No problem. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Before we go, Aurora Healing Crew, take a deep breath like you're soaking in sunlight. Warm, steady, grounding. As you move through your day, check in with your gut. Notice how you feel around others. Your energy is precious. Protect it so you have the strength and light to do what really matters to you. Because life is hard, and we're getting through it together. Thank you for listening to the Aurora Sessions Beyond the Couch. Visit our website at aurorasuncounseling.com to learn more. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search Aurora Sun Counseling. Got questions or topics you'd love to hear us cover? Email us at info@aurorasuncounseling.com or drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.